Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Today is Thanksgiving Day, and I thought I would talk a bit around the theme of gratitude. It's been coming up in my mind, and appropriate day to speak of it. Thinking in terms of the, say, gratitude as a quality that we help to, say, instill in our minds a sense of appreciation, well-being, respect, kind of a generosity of heart. By saying gratitude, then it's also kind of referring to a cluster of wholesome mental states and qualities. To me, I think it forms a really important part of developing the path. There's an overdeveloped sense of those of us in the West to place undue importance excessive importance on, say, maybe technique or meditative technique or even knowledge. If I just got the right bit of knowledge, that something would happen. If I just got the technique down, I'm obviously doing the wrong meditation and there must be the right meditation that's going to make me clear and trigger my mind into some realization. And I think what's easy to overlook is the importance that these fundamental wholesome qualities that are characterized by gratitude, generosity, appreciation, that these tend to foster. Also, one of the things that the qualities like that of gratitude and generosity, appreciation, what it does effectively is get us out of an obsession with ourselves. That's a great relief. I remember going to pay respects to Ajahn Buddhadasa, who is one of Thailand's most respected teachers, meditators, scholars. He taught for a very long time. I'll bet well over 50 years. He had a teaching career which affected many, many, many people. And it was toward the end of his life. He was over 80 already. And I had the opportunity from time to time to go and pay respects to him, but I followed his teachings. Actually, when I was learning Thai, that was how I learned Thai, was reading Ajahn Buddhadasa books. And there weren't that many Dhamma books around, really, anywhere. And there wasn't any of Ajahn Chah in those days. Ajahn Buddhadasa had a particular style in that he would pick up a theme and he would speak around that theme for months or even years. And that his weekly Dhamma talks would just be that theme come at from different angles. And I say when there's a compilation of his talks, they've organized them thematically, and there was and from different periods of his time, and there's this one period where he talked on the Four Noble Truths, and the books are about two of them, like yay thick. There's, I don't know how many pages, but knowing that that's what he did, then I asked him. Now you're, because he'd also we'd been talking, and his health was starting to diminish a bit, and then he was sort of, I remember him saying, I said, yeah, I'm over 80 now. I'm just embarrassed to keep on living. The Buddha died at 80, and here I am, 82, and still hanging around. It's just, this is really embarrassing. I asked him what, having recognized that he tended to teach on different, picking up themes, and what theme was he emphasizing in this last stage of his life? And he said, oh, these days, I'm not teaching much of anything at all. All I'm plugging over and over again is don't be selfish. And that is like a incredibly simple, clear teaching that has many applications and implications. But it's also the culmination of somebody's Ajahn Buddhadasa, his experience in his own practice and his teaching in that's what he saw as the most important thing to impart before he passed on. And so that qualities like gratitude these are things that help us to pull away from that tendency to be selfish, not and it's different permutations. Selfish in the sense of when we something happens and it ends up all about me, we go into a situation. And there's a kind of a discomfort because it's all about me. The worry or fear, anxiety, or trying to make an impression, or worried about what kind of impression. So that those are all of that is kind of. I mean, there's a selfishness, not so much in the English use of the word, but in that sense that self keeps imposing itself on experience, and we suffer. So that to those the qualities of gratitude, generosity, appreciation. These are kind of fundamental to the human condition. But it's important that we place conscious attention onto it, because it's easy to overlook their importance and power that it has to really change the mind. I think of William James said something like one of the fundamental traits of the human mind and the human condition is the need for appreciation. William James is one of the sort of few Americans who really, really understood the the human condition. There's a need for appreciation, and so both giving, but also learning how to receive it, and also learning how to look after oneself, so that there is a sense of appreciation of self also. So these are these kind of wholesome qualities that come from conduct of virtuous conduct, skillful conduct, generosity, giving, and then the gratitude. One of the things that the Buddha said is that there's two things that are hard to find in the human condition, so two beings. So one who is grateful, and one who acts or reciprocates that gratitude. And so that, and that's not to be taken just as a cynical comment on the human condition, but a recognition that it's a worthy quality to emulate and try to bring up. It is it's not so ordinary that one can neglect it, and one has to put forth an attention to that, so that it does help to support and uplift the mind. Also, when the Buddha spoke of gratitude, he spoke of it as a distinguishing characteristic of a truly good human being. That's like a truly good human being is somebody who is well grounded in gratitude and the ability to reciprocate that out of gratitude. One of the strengths that it gives to the mind is this kind of uplift, a sense of well-being, a sense of openness, and what it to me and what it echoes is. When in the suttas there's a stock phrase of when the Buddha gives a graduated teaching either giving it to lay people, to monastics, but then it's his sort of preparation for. Introducing people into the teachings, establishing them in right view, and oftentimes establishing them in stream entry, and the Buddha speaks on the benefits of generosity, on virtue, on the heavenly realms, on the drawbacks of sensuality, and the benefits of relinquishment. But then in the stock phrase, when the Buddha recognized that so and so was their mind was ready, receptive, free from hindrance, eager and trustful, then he taught the Four Noble Truths. And it's that, then it's the usual stock phrase, and of course that is having seen these Four Noble Truths, that's the key to their entering the stream of Dhamma. But I think it's not the Four Noble Truths in isolation, or the Four Noble Truths as a piece of information. It's the Four Noble Truths, entering the heart that is ready, receptive, free from hindrance, eager and trustful. And that's one of the things that qualities like gratitude, generosity, appreciation, virtue. I mean, all these what we think of as kind of basic religious practices that you take note of, them, but you want to get on to the real practice. But I think it's important not to skip over. Or to miss the importance of that preparation of mind and learning to pay attention to those qualities that allow the mind and the heart to really be to be ready, to be receptive, to be free from hindrance, to be eager and trustful, so that generosity is really one quality, because it takes that sense of a willingness to give, to share, and there's always a corollary of relinquishment in that, so that that sense of when we even when we're practicing, if one starts to see things in terms of an opportunity to give oneself to the practice, to give oneself to relinquishment, to give oneself to peacefulness, and you're seeing it as a gift, seeing it as an act of giving, as opposed to really trying to get that meditation on the breath down so I can get my samadhi and get my insights which ties one up in knots, so that sense of giving being a strong inclination of the mind, of the heart, and of course those are manifested in how we relate to the world and the people around us. But then also that quality of gratitude, to be able to recognize opportunities to appreciate the circumstances that one's in, just the fact of having a human body with all of our faculties. Yeah, it's no small thing. And to be able to hear the teachings, to be able to have the opportunity to practice the teaching, the opportunity to be on a retreat. These are it's really rare in the world, and not just as an external thing, but it's also in terms of gratitude and appreciation, and paying attention to the fact that appreciation of oneself also, that I must be doing something right. I'm here. I'm on retreat. I'm with good people. Percentage-wise. In 350 million people that are in America observing Thanksgiving Day today, how many people are cultivating generosity and virtue and Dhamma practice. It's a whole different world out there. So I hear. Not having grown up in America, then I don't. I only hear the stories. When I think of examples of gratitude, the first person who comes to mind is Sariputta. We know Sariputta as being the foremost in wisdom, and he has this incredible ability to just analyze and expound on the Dhamma. But personally, how he conducted himself was incredibly humble, and gratitude every night, wherever he laid down to sleep, his first teacher, the person who introduced him to the Dhamma, was Asaji, one of the first five disciples of the Buddha, and he would bring to mind his teacher Asaji, try to sort of okay, where is he, and he would bow in that direction, sort of every night. That was a daily part of his living. And it's out of gratitude for the introduction to the teachings that he had received. Also, as a part of his kind of daily practice, sort of out of gratitude to the Buddha and the Sangha, he would always go on alms round. He'd take a short alms round. And he'd usually be the last out of the monastery, and he'd take the time to go around the monastery, pick things up, put things in their place, clean up of things that. And I've lived in a monastery for a long time, and even amongst mindful meditators, there's always stuff later laying around, or just needs a little bit more cleaning up, or swept up, or picked up, and that was part of Sariputta's practice. It was an expression of gratitude. And it wasn't he didn't say anything, but it was that was his way of living in a way of gratitude, so that that's a really wonderful example, because it also, I think, particularly because it's coming from somebody who is so accomplished in wisdom and practice. I remember one time, an example closer to our time. In the it's early 1990s, or 1993, 94, something like that, and. Somebody found in Ubon, which is where Ajahn Chah's monastery is, where I spent my time, Ubon province, and which is where Ajahn Mun was born, was raised, ordained as a monk. But he spent, when he started teaching, he spent most of his time much further north in the northeast of Thailand. And there's only a few pictures of Ajahn Mun, but in and that's all that had been known. And then in about 93, 94, then somebody in Ubon was going through their parents' things after they'd passed away and found a picture of Ajahn Mun that was... it's actually very nice. To me, it's the nicest picture of Ajahn Mun. It's the one we've got hanging up in the sala at in the meditation hall at Abayagiri. And that picture was found, and then they brought it to Wat Nanachat, and I had a whole bunch of copies made, and then there was a group of monks from Wat Nanachat going up to that northern area where Ajahn Mun used to teach, and then where monks like Ajahn Mahabua lived and taught, so that they took them up and offered them. And when they went to Ajahn Mahabua, who's, you know, he's pretty crusty character, fierce, and then they offered this picture, and they said, Ajahn Mahabua just lit up and immediately put it up on the shrine and bowed three times. And this was just and so incredibly both grateful to us for having brought it, but then just this very tangible expression of gratitude to his teacher. Even though he's considered this enlightened master, who's ferocious, but when it came to his that recollection of gratitude to his teacher, to Ajahn Mun, and it was very tangible and unaffected display of gratitude. And it was, you know, not thought through. Not sort of thought, oh, this is what I need to do. But this is an expression coming from the heart. So the sense of gratitude being such a powerful and wholesome, sort of utterly wholesome emotion. Another example that I think of is like with Ajahn Chah, and Ajahn Chah had many, many disciples and students, and most applied themselves quite diligently, but there's one particular disciple who he had ordained somewhere else, who was fairly I can't remember how many reigns he was when he came to live with Ajahn Chah, study with Ajahn Chah, but he was he's a really rough character, but he had faith in Ajahn Chah, and then he studied and practiced, and then he had his own monastery, just as a kind of example of his background, he was he had this a scar across his head, like from across his forehead down into his ears. And it was he got that in a sort of a fight with and the other end of an axe. So he was was a real rough character. But he ordained but he had this kind of rough nature, and hardly anybody could live with him. And he was always doing things that would get everybody else upset in the circle of Ajahn Chah's students and disciples. And there'd always be another story coming back down from Amnat Jalur. And I was thinking, oh, he's up to it again. And he'd get brought up in front of the Sangha, and he'd apologize, and he'd go back. And he just went on. And so many times, and there was one time where it was just really sort of over the top, and most of the other senior monks were, you know, can't we just kick him out and get rid of him? He's a real burden. And Ajahn Chah was silent for a minute, and he said, no, he still has faith in me, and he has gratitude. And that was the that was the qualities that Ajahn Chah saw, that was he was still teachable. So that quality of when somebody who still has gratitude and is able to tap into gratitude. It's not a small thing, and actually, you know, he's still a monk. He's quite old now, and he's going to quite a sweet old man now. and Ajahn Chah really sort of went to bat for him and stuck up for him. And it was just that sense of recognizing gratitude as a quality that can carry you through, and that's really important. So that in our practice, to be consciously bringing that to mind, the aspects of things that we can appreciate, that we can be grateful for, the things that we can give to reciprocate that gratitude and that's always something that one can look back on have that feeling of the mind being kind of ready, receptive, free from hindrance, eager and trustful. Those are qualities that we want to be trying to foster and support. As we continue to do that, of course, it fosters that within ourselves a sense of it's so much easier to relinquish or to do something when there is that sense of appreciation of the qualities of generosity, of gratitude, because whatever the circumstance, we can always make it beneficial in some way. There's a very lovely teaching of Dilpo Khyentse is a Tibetan Rinpoche, and he's highly respected. And he talks about just the attitude that we can be bringing to our practice and our living, in that everything can be turned to something beneficial. You know, one experiences some difficulty and turning it to the thought, you know, may all beings not have to experience difficulty and suffering. One experiences happiness and well-being, you know, thinking, you know, may happiness come to all beings, like just like this. So using it as seeds, he says, you're walking going out of the building, and opening the door, and you should really consciously bring to mind him. May the door to the deathless be open to all beings. You're leaving a house. You close the door. You know, may all beings close the door to the lower realms. And, going up, you know, walking up a hill, and may all beings be able to rise to some goodness. You're going down, walking down a hill. May all beings not be drawn into their lower natures. There's all sorts of ways that one can be, and it's an expression of generosity and gratitude for the teachings, and that connection between our own ability to turn the mind to what is wholesome and skillful, that we are able to access the experience of peace and clarity, because what's so important as a practitioner, and I think I mentioned it yesterday, is just learning how to get out of the way. It's that learning how to step back from that sense of self, of me, of mine, that entwines itself around all of our experience. Complicates things, and something like a quality like gratitude, appreciation is an uncomplicated expression of the heart. It's as William James is saying, it's fundamental to the human condition. So that learning how to tap into that, so that it is a source of support and nourishment for our practice, for our development of this path, and obviously, we do need to have skill in meditation. We do need to reflect and investigate with discernment. But it's allowing that to rise up out of that heart that is open and clear and eager and trustful. Those are our qualities to be nurturing. So I offer that for reflection this morning.